My first guest is renowned author Diane Johnson. And Diane is the best-selling author of 14 books, including Le Divorce, Le Mariage, and L'Affaire. I like all those French names. And she is a two-time finalist for the Pulitzer Prize and a three-time finalist for the National Book Award. She lives in Paris and San Francisco, and we are also going to be talking about her brand new book, which is Lulu in Marrakesh. The second half of the program, I am going to be chatting with David Holbrook, who is the director of Mountain Film, which we all know is coming up, and we're going to hear from David about that. But without further ado, I would like to welcome Diane Johnson to Travel Fun. Hi, Diane.
Hi, Mary Beth. How are you?
Great. It's good to have you here on the phone from Paris. That's always fun.
Yes.
Springtime in Paris. And I did want to talk with you on my theme, April in Paris, that I'm doing here at the end of May, because you are such a keen observer of the French, and especially how they relate to Americans. But before we talk about that, I just found out recently that you are a keen observer of everything and the English and Americans and expats abroad, and so many of that, those people were covered in your new book, Lulu in Marrakesh, that I just finished and I fell in love with. And let's talk about that first. Of course, it's a novel, but it is a little bit of a departure from your other books, since it is the story of an American spy. And so you have that sort of espionage element that, to me in any event, was new. Maybe you had it in some of your other books. Talk a little bit about that.
Well, Lulu, yes, Lulu is a spy, or she works for the CIA. She's kind of a low-level spy. I'm fond of spy novels, but I have thought from time to time, why is the spy never a woman? And so I decided that I would write a spy novel, and instead of a man, I would have a woman. Like the man, and like the male spy in most spy novels, who has a girlfriend, Lulu would have a boyfriend, a lover, but with just as much importance in the plot as the woman usually has in the male spy thing, i.e., the preoccupation would be on something else, but the lover would be there. And I mention this because I, in a way, found that readers, and maybe my own practice as a writer, tended to get involved with Lulu's personal life almost as much as the spy activities that she's supposed to be doing. But anyway, so Lulu is there, and her job is to worm her way into the heart of the expatriate community, which in Morocco is mostly French and English, and try to see which foreigners might be sending donations to terrorist organizations. And so that's her mission. She also has a cover mission, which is to report on female literacy in Morocco, because as we speak, only about half the women in Morocco know how to read. Actually, only half the people in Morocco know how to read. And with the female people, it's somewhat less. So there's a bit of that, and there's a bit of a social observation of that kind, a bit of observation about the role of women in Islam. And then there's the spy story, and then there's the love story.
And, of course, me having such a great interest in travel and this being a travel show, you just whisk us off to Morocco. The sights, the sounds, the smells of Morocco, of Marrakesh, are so wonderful. And I was fortunate enough to go to Morocco twice, once to Marrakesh, and you just put me right back there. I love that part of it. Have you, you must have spent quite a bit of time in Morocco to be able to write about the country in such a way.
I have spent some time in Morocco. I spent actually longer in Iran about 20 years ago, and in Cairo, where my husband was working for a while. And so some of the basic things, the mosques and minarets, the call to prayer and so on, is the same in Morocco as it would be in other Islamic countries, in other Muslim countries. But then I was overwhelmed when I went to Morocco with the architecture, the beauty, the smells, as you say. So there is certainly Morocco itself too. I loved Morocco. It was a fascinating place. Moroccan food is wonderful.
And you also mentioned the Mamounia Hotel, which is quite the place there, and a lot takes place, a lot of the meetings take place there. Let's move on to your relationship with France. I think I would call you an ardent Francophile. In any event, you have a wonderful grasp of the French. You have been spending time there how many years?
Oh, it's been a dozen years now that we've been here, my husband and I, we came because of his work. He's a professor of medicine, and he was working with a French research team. But we don't spend all year because he also has his teaching at the University of California, and I have my, stateside things, too. So I wouldn't say we were full-time residents even yet, but from not a Franco-skeptic, but a person indifferent to France, I've been transformed into kind of a Francophile because I think it's an impressive culture, and it's a wonderful place to live. So I do recommend it as a place either to travel to or to spend more time in.
What do you mean by an impressive culture?
Well, I think I just sort of happen to agree with its cultural and social priorities. It seems to want to make sure that nobody falls by the wayside, which is a great thing, and that everybody has medical care, those basic things, and can afford a train ticket because, of course, it has trains, which are I'm a great train lover by now, and then it spends a lot of money on education, a greater proportion of its income on education, on beautification, taking care of its monuments, on expanding cultural activities of all kinds, and so it's a very rich place to live in terms of lectures, museums, movies. In America, it's kind of hard to go to the movies, at least in San Francisco. There's the parking dread. There's the, parking, I think, actually, is the worst of it. Here, you just walk to the movies. So it's even easier to go to American movies in France than it is in my hometown. So I just find all of those things add up to a kind of easier daily life. In my case, it means I can spend more time writing and other things I like to do.
In your triptych of books, Le Divorce, Le Mariage, and L'Affaire, which, of course, are written in English, even with those marvelous French titles,
yeah.
You really give the reader a sense of the French mentality, the French personality, and in particular how that relates to Americans. Talk about some of the observations you have about the French.
Well, I think when I first got to France and we were spending a year sabbatical, I was more struck by some superficial things that I could notice right off the bat, like the women wearing scarves or the menus or what you did in restaurants. The thing, you know, very superficial but important ways of fitting in. I didn't speak French at that time, so I was limited in my conversations with French people. Then I think by the time of Le Mariage, I'd been invited to a French wedding, for example. We had French friends. I was beginning to observe some of the customs of French family life, because it is a very family-oriented culture, very, you know, very Sunday lunch with all grandmother and everyone there and so on. And I think that's good. It's so often impossible in America because of our great distances and so on. And then by the time of Affaire, which takes place in a French ski resort, I'd had several winters of French skiing by then, and I was beginning to fit in, I thought, a little more, and so it perhaps is less full of these rather superficial cultural observations and has a more intuitive feel. In the case of L'Affaire, the heroine is a dot-com millionaire who goes trying to get French culture and polish herself up a bit, and that's what happens, of course. And that discusses some more, I don't know, intimate aspects of French French American relationships, I would say. So what have I noticed about that? The things that I've noticed has made me like and respect them. That is their family orientation, for example, their politeness, their concern for everyone's comfort, and you know, they kind of have a way of making life easy for themselves and others, and that if things as superficial as comfortable trains or easy ways of getting from here to there, but also passes to cultural events for the elderly and the young, you know, museums that have free days for everybody, just a lot of things like that that encourages public participation in the collective. In the collective culture and the collective good. So it's easier for them logistically. I mentioned our size in America, I think, goes against some of that, but I think we also need to take a lesson from France, and of course I think many people feel this, which is why there are so many people who are interested in France and who having written these books about France, I tend to be on the publishers' list and so on. So other people, publishers send books written by other people about France. And this gives me a good overview. And there are many wonderful books written about France, the French and France. But what strikes me first off is how many there are. And how all of them have this constant theme of kind of dreaming of France as the ideal place. Of course, it isn't really the ideal place. It just it's a practical place, which has a lot of good ideas that we could all learn from, I think.
What would your advice be for the traveler setting off to France?
Well, I think read a few books. You know, not kind of just about how to negotiate the trains and so on, so that you'll be able to read the maps and understand what the metro is and those basic things, because I think sometimes people are kind of thrown the first time by not hearing a language that they understand. There aren't many signs in English. People do speak English, but but Americans are often shy about that. And then don't be the loud American, you know, and don't try to speak French by speaking English louder. All those real obvious things that I'm sure you've been telling them, too. But we don't see that so much anymore. Americans are are much more polished and you know, culturally sensitive than they used to be, I think. Maybe, you know, that's what I noticed around Paris, anyway.
I am visiting with Diane Johnson, renowned author of, so now it's 15 books, right,
Diane? Oh,
15, including your most recent, Lulu in Marrakesh. And in fact, your book, Le Divorce, was made into a movie by Merchant Ivory, which was very nice, but I have to say I love reading your books the best.
Thank you.
And so what are you working on now?
Well, I'm finishing some stories that I'd begun, you know, in the past decade or something, that are kind of slightly autobiographical and, you know, kind of memoir slash story slash travel stories, actually. I don't know if you ever read a book of mine, which was travel stories. It was kind of up your alley. It was called Natural Opium, and I don't know that anyone ever read it, but it was published by Knopf maybe, I don't know how long ago, even 15 years.
Uh-huh.
And it was travel stories garnered by me in following my husband around the world, because his interest is in world tuberculosis. And so that took us to China and to Japan and to the Middle East and of course to France. So there are a lot of stories, and now I'm just continuing on with that same character, me and John, and telling some further adventures. So
that sounds fascinating.
I don't know if it will be, but I hope so.
You certainly have been exposed to many different cultures, and it's wonderful how you weave that into your writings. And also, of course, we have to emphasize that you live a good amount of your time in San Francisco. So there's always usually a California blonde in your stories.
Yes. as a kind of alter ego. And Lulu in Lulu in Marrakesh is such a California blonde.
Diane,
I don't know why I give everyone blonde hair. I have dark hair myself, and so I suppose it signals a kind of inner wish to have been a blonde.
Well, it works, so why question it? Now, the website for Diane is redroom.com/author/Diane-Johnson. And once again, Diane spends half of her time in San Francisco and half of her time in Paris, two wonderful cities. And most recent book is Lulu in Marrakesh. I thoroughly enjoyed it, and I'm sure you will too. Diane, do you have anything you'd like to add?
Well, I could say, Mary Beth, it's about time that you were back in Paris.
I know. I'm so long overdue. But I have to say I've become entirely enchanted by the West also. So,
well, that's an understandable enchantment. But one of these days you'll have to update your Paris book.
I will. Well, the last edition came out 2 years ago. Actually,
okay, so that's
exactly 2 years,
yeah.
And particularly for the type of travel book that I write, I talk about mainly the bastions of tradition, places that don't change so much, and I feel that for reading up on trendy places, it's more it's better to check out a magazine article or even go to my website.
Yeah, the websites are good for really up-to-date opening hours and things like that. I always do that, too.
And in information. So now, anything hot to say about Paris this spring? Favorite restaurants or stores or
ambiance? Well, that we were in spring. It's really still kind of cold and rainy here, I have to admit. It doesn't have the... Paris, it's the only downside, does not have the best weather.
I agree. The winters were particularly difficult for me. Very little sunshine, or certainly not enough for me.
Right. yeah. Alas.
But when those flowers start blooming, they do bloom early, and
they are
beautiful.
Yeah, and we've had so the lilacs and things like that are just coming out now. Some of the fruit, the flowering fruit trees, or, you know, ornamental cherries and things that have bloomed and blown. So we've had a day or two of sunshine.
And what's the mood in Paris these days?
Oh, I think not as pessimistic as in America. I haven't been in America since December, but there is a crisis, a financial crisis here, but people are not, they seem less touched by it. Maybe it's just a delayed effect, or maybe there are enough protections built in. It's kind of a more managed economy, and so maybe, you know, the banks were overseen better and everything. I'm not sure because I'm not an economist, but you do notice that people are not panicking.
Right. I've heard from many sources that the restaurants are still full.
They still seem to be full.
Right. Well, food is an essential part of life in Paris.
I've heard that a couple of the big and expensive restaurants, I mean the great expensive restaurants, have reduced their prices a tiny bit. But I must say we haven't found that, alas. Maybe we've been going to the wrong ones.
Well, Diane, it certainly has been a pleasure visiting with you. And thank you for talking about your work. You know, I'm one of your biggest fans. For anybody that wants to get in touch with France, I recommend many of Diane's books, especially Le Divorce, Le Mariage, and L'Affaire. They're great reads. And now we have Morocco and Lulu and Marrakesh, and then more great works. So, Diane, thank you very much, and have a nice spring, and continued success with your writing.
Thank you, Mary Beth. It's very nice to talk to you again.
Take care. A bientôt. Au revoir.
Au revoir.
La lumière qui éclaire mes pensées.